You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Welcome to another episode in our ongoing series, JX Outside. This is where we talk about fun activities in the great outdoors. I'm Mike Green. We have a packed show this morning with four guests. Three are joining me for the first half of the show, and we'll switch out one of our guests during the second half. Joining me in the studio now are two familiar faces. Nicole Larson is one of our resident outdoor enthusiasts. She loves horses, backcountry skiing, and mountain biking. She's a lifelong trail runner who also grew up on Mount Ashland and now lives on a small ranch in Northern California. Good to see you again, Nicole.
Thank you, Mike. It's good to see you, too.
Also joining us is Jen Bray. She's a returning guest on JX Outside. Jen is a Navy veteran with 26 years' experience in wildland firefighting in the Klamath Mountains. Jen has climbed Mount Shasta three times for breast cancer prevention partners, and she's explored many trails throughout Siskiyou County in southern Oregon. Welcome back to The Exchange, Jen.
So glad to be here. Thanks, Mike.
And joining us on the phone is Justy Hansen. She's the director of the Mount Shasta Nordic Center. Justy has spent the last 27 years skiing, cycling, and working in the mountains around Mount Shasta. With experience as a ski patroller and a mountain guide, she now leads outdoor recreation activities at Mount Shasta. Welcome, Justy.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you for joining us. Nicole, let's start with a general sense of the weather for outdoor activities. Seems like it's kind of a mild start to the winter.
It has been a mild start to the winter and a little disappointing through the month of December for a lot of us ski snow enthusiasts, but it wasn't not wet. So it did have a lot of adventure. I would say the waterfalls were amazing, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But what is exciting right now is that it's been snowing, and we have ski areas open, we have sledding happening and snowshoeing. So it is happening, and we are excited. We are excited.
When you say we, you're talking about Mount Shasta, Mount Ashland.
Well, we are talking about Mount Shasta. It is open and has great conditions. We do have snow coming, though, to our area right here. We had a little bit of a dusting last night on Mount Ashland, and we have more snow coming in this afternoon.
Okay, so let's be clear, because yes, Mount Shasta has a very distant and distinct climate than Mount Ashland.
It does, but they usually are similar, right? We can see each other from each other's parking lots, I guess you could say. Mount Shasta is open, and the conditions are great. Mm-hmm. The backcountry is good. It's all new, though. So the base is fresh, and there's still a lot of things to think about when you go up there. Thinking about avalanche danger, being prepared.
There was just an avalanche on Avalanche Gulch, actually, that was recently reported. So avalanches are a big deal right now.
Okay, Avalanche Gulch is on
Mount Shasta.
Mount Shasta.
The north side of Mount Shasta.
Okay. So what about Mount Ashland?
Mount Ashland, light dusting. So they were open for a quick minute, and they did have to shut down one more time. I checked in with them. Not an opening date yet, but let's keep our fingers crossed. People are excited. So the commute down to Ashland is not far. And there is Mount Bachelor as well. They got a little snow as well and more coming. So, you know, a little commute for our snow bunnies, it's worth it.
Okay. So, Justy, you're over at Mount,
yes,
you're over at Mount Shasta.
Yes.
Tell me about what you do.
So I'm actually the director of Siskiyou Outdoor Recreation Alliance, where I'm dedicated to advancing rural economic development and community health through sustainable outdoor recreation. And the Mount Shasta Nordic Center is one of our programs. And the Nordic Center is actually run and directed by Dante Girondavango. He actually grew up skiing at the Mount Shasta Nordic Center. So the organization does many things related to outdoor recreation, and then the Nordic Center is just focused on, providing the Nordic Center operations.
And how long have you been there?
The Mount Shasta Ski Park operated the Nordic Center for years, and then in 2006, a nonprofit was formed to operate the Nordic Center. And then around 2019, two local nonprofits merged to create Siskiyou Outdoor Recreation Alliance. And then Mount Shasta Nordic was basically absorbed into that organization.
And how many visitors are expected this season at Mount Shasta?
We'll probably get a couple thousand visitors, including all of our youth programs.
Are you open now, Justy?
We are. Well, we are. We're closed today because of that big wet storm that came in.
Right.
It rained at the Nordic Center, so we needed the snowpack to dry out a little bit. But we plan to open tomorrow. But we were open over the winter holiday.
Right.
We were very busy, as you all know. We have a new lodge, so that was really exciting. This is our first season with a new structure. We had just a little yurt for many years, and now we have this beautiful new 650-square-foot lodge.
And we can get rental gear there, right?
Yes, exactly. So one thing that's new with the Mount Shasta Nordic Center is that we're in the process of, we're kind of on the tail end of a full facilities upgrade project. A couple of years ago, we received a $1.1 million grant from the California State Parks Regional Park Program, and that gave us the funding to construct the new 650-square-foot lodge, which is off the grid. It's solar-powered, and it's beautiful inside. I kind of describe it as a nice Danish design interior, very clean look. And in that grant, we also got two new vault toilets, and we also got funding for 5.6 miles of gateway trail system, so mountain bike trails, because this is sort of a real recreation upgrade for our community. We also got a new groomer that was funded by the Tom and Nancy Driscoll Foundation and the California Jobs First Catalyst Program and the Ford Family Foundation. And then we also got funding from the McConnell Fund to purchase a new fleet of rental ski equipment. So it's been a big project, and we're very proud.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to JX Outside on the Jefferson Exchange. My guests are Nicole Larson, our resident outdoor enthusiast, Jen Bray, a wildland firefighter, and Justy Hansen, executive director of the Nordic Center at Mount Shasta. So, Jen, you're a wildland firefighter, and we're done with firefighting season, and now the winter just means you can relax, I guess. What pulls you outdoors?
There's a lot of activities that happen outdoors, actually. The winter or the Christmas bird count just finished. It starts December 14th and runs through January 5th, and a little bit of the history of that. It used to be, prior to the turn of the 20th century, hunters would engage in this tradition known as the Christmas side hunt, and they would choose sides and go in the fields with their guns, and whoever brought the biggest pile of feathered friends in won. The conservation efforts started then, and it began the Christmas bird count that started on Christmas Day in 1900, the Christmas bird consensus, and it turned to counting birds instead of hunting them. So that began the Christmas bird count, and we had 85 different species in our local Scott Valley region, but it's a global count from Columbia to the Rogue Valley. People are counting birds from December 14th till January 5th. So it's a pretty big deal. It's really exciting. Anybody can join. You can get more information on the Audubon website.
Okay, so this is news to me. I didn't know that people would go out into the freezing cold and stand there with, I'm assuming, with binoculars. I don't know.
Yes. And so we had to put a warning out in our local areas, like, don't be creeped out that people are looking in your yard with their binoculars. They're just looking at your bird feeders, looking at the different birds migrating through the area. So, yeah, the warning is good so people don't get nervous.
Okay. So they're out there watching the birds, mm-hmm. and they're counting. Now, I have to tell you that from time to time, geese fly over our house. My wife just loves that when it happens. And we try to count the geese, and they fly in a V, so they're fairly easy to count, but they're not.
Yeah, and you get pretty good at looking at groups of birds and thinking, okay, that's 10, that's 20, that's 50. So looking at the different types of groups gives you a swag, a scientific wise guess.
So if you've got, and I'm assuming, lots of people out counting these birds, how do they know that they haven't counted one bird more than once?
There's definitely a balance in those numbers, but everybody gets a different geographic section, and so nobody is overlapping those sections. The birds will move, so there's that plus or minus factor in every survey, but everybody sticks to their strategic location.
And they record this how?
old school, pen and paper. And then we have experts with us. So we say, there's one.
Different types of species of birds.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Every bird. We count all the birds. And then coming up is also the eagle count. So we're going to count all the raptors, the eagles, the hawks, the falcons. It's pretty fun.
Okay. So that's the most unusual outdoor activity I've ever heard of during the winter.
Yeah.
Most people are dealing with activities in the snow, like, Mount Ashland hasn't had much snow.
They have not. But you can venture down to Mount Shasta. And I do want to bring up a couple things before we leave the subject of snow. It is important to have your education. And there are a couple events coming up that are really fun to be a part of if you're in the snow world. If you go to Mount Shasta, they have their 12th annual Ascension Race, which is essentially backcountry skiing at the resort, but you're racing. So you're racing uphill either on, your backcountry ski gear, and then you take your turns down. Are you questioning? I see a look.
Nicole, you're telling me that people are putting on skis and they're racing in the snow uphill.
Yes, exactly. So it is a backcountry race where you climb under your own power. And you earn every turn on the way back down. It is also a dress-up race. So they encourage dress-up, leather pants, wigs, you name it. They want all of it. So, and it's also for kids. There's a race department part for children as well, which is really fun.
So, okay, so not only are we on skis racing uphill, but we're costumed.
Exactly. So it's a good time. That is on the 24th. So let's say you are not going to the ski resort and you do want to get into the backcountry, and that is really great. But if you're not experienced, it is important to know before you go your avalanche information. So in Reading Sports LTD, they have a free training on the 15th, which is great. And also on, SWS has a training also, Avalanche 1, that is also coming up. So these are worthy to check out, and you can just go to the Mount Shasta Avalanche Center website, and there's a lot of good information there. So know before you go.
Now, if in order for us to go, we're going to have to traverse these roads, and road conditions are always, a concern. So Give me some tips on that. What should we be concerned about? And how should we prepare? What should we take with us when we're going
up
the mountain?
The winter travel basics is important in, having chains, making sure your car is in good working order, letting people know where you're going, and checking websites like ODOT. What's the one in California, Jen, for cameras? I know ODOT goes all the way through.
Yeah.
That's a great way to check out. Also, the Avalanche Center also has webcams that you can check. And these are important to look to make sure that you're prepared. So you have your extra clothes in your car, you've got water, and your snow parking passes if that's in your area that you need.
Caltrans has a good website for all the road cameras and stuff in Northern California.
Okay. I always throw a small shovel in my car, too.
Yes.
That's always a good idea.
Not a bad idea.
Justy, we've got about a minute left. Should people be thinking about? What should they bring with them when they're visiting the Nordic Center?
So in preparation for skiing at the Nordic Center, it's just warm clothes, whatever you feel comfortable in terms of skiing. You want to watch the weather, because if it's snowing, you probably want some waterproof layers. But with Nordic skiing, you get a pretty good workout. So sometimes people wear like a light beanie and a bandana, more leggings rather than, if it's snowing, waterproof pants. But the wonderful thing about Nordic skiing is that the trails are groomed and signed. So if you're not comfortable with navigating in the backcountry, this is a great place to feel safer because the trails are groomed and signed, so you don't have to worry about getting lost. We've got about 23.5 kilometers of groomed trails and 2.5 kilometers of snowshoe trails. We've got youth programs. We have a growing availability for group lessons and private lessons and specialty clinics that really focus on, for example, skate skiing skills, which is a pretty technical style of skiing, as well as classic skiing, which is sometimes a little bit easier to learn.
We're going to have to leave it there. Unfortunately, we have to take a short break. Yeah. Thanks for joining us, Chesty.
You bet.
We'll be right back with Nicole Larson and Jen Bray, and we'll introduce a new guest on JX Outside. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on JPR. You're listening to the JX Outside on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guests in the studio are Nicole Larson, a resident outdoor enthusiast, and Jen Bray, a wildland firefighter. Joining us by phone is Sean Bullock. Sean is an award-winning filmmaker from Mount Shasta and a former professional whitewater kayaker. He's worked at the highest levels of action sports and adventure media, including leading major productions for GoPro. He now runs Lox Media, which creates documentary films rooted in wild places and river culture. Welcome to the JX Outside, Sean.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it sounds like your life is just one big adventure. How'd you gain an interest in extreme sports as a kid?
Oh, man. Well, I just say I think everybody living in Siskiyou probably shares that same enthusiasm. And, luckily I was born into a family that really appreciates river culture and being out in nature, and luckily was able to have some opportunities to follow that path and travel the world kayaking, and got to jump on board with a little company called GoPro back in 2006. So obviously a lot different company than it is now, but great piece of equipment to capture those adventures on.
So tell me about your background.
Yeah, well, was born here in Mount Shasta, California. Grew up in South Siskiyou. Started kayaking at a very young age. I was 2 months old, strapped to an IK with my dad. Got into hard shell kayaking around age 14, and then started paddling competitively around 16, which led to a whitewater kayaking academy, which I was fortunate to travel the world. Did 3 months in South America and Chile and Argentina, and then a West Coast competition tour before graduating high school, and then went to film school at UC Santa Cruz shortly thereafter, kind of doubling down on content and storytelling, and luckily a lot of those relationships from my kayaking career led pretty seamlessly into cultural documentary and action sports. So with GoPro, was able to do productions with Red Bull, from Red Bull Rampage to bringing the first POV to the Tour de France, did a full tour out there, and then unique perspectives at Wimbledon in terms of mountain cameras on tennis rackets. And so my life now is kind of spread between documentary action sports and branded commercial content.
Okay, so this might sound like a surprise to you, but you're the very first professional kayaker I've ever spoken with.
It's shocking, and it's not shocking at all. We're somewhat of an endangered species and a weird thing to have in one sentence. Professional and kayaking usually don't form in the same sentence, so it's not that abnormal.
So I have a couple of questions. Tell me about the life of a professional kayaker. What goes into that? What's a day-to-day?
Man, the day-to-day. Well, I mean, I think most out there would say your day-to-day should involve going kayaking and being out there. I think if you're specializing in slalom or freestyle versus action and adventure, it's kind of a little bit different. But, you know, generally it would start with calling your friends and seeing which ones are willing to go and make some questionable decisions with you. And that's kind of how most everything started in my world was, a group of friends that enjoyed adventure and sharing experiences that, most would classify in that type 2 or even type 3 fun of you got to enjoy a little bit of suffering to come and play.
How athletic do you have to become a professional kayaker?
Oh, I'd say you got to be a lot dumber than athletic, just in terms of the process of what you're talking about. I think your amygdala isn't fully formed. But no, you should definitely be in fitness terms, you should be in shape and understanding that whenever you think you've given everything you've got, there's definitely another gear in there that you got to tap into.
Well, whitewater rapids range up to level fives, right?
Yeah, so the 1 through 6 scale actually was created for rafting. So in kayaking, it's kind of a topic of discussion of, you know, there's a lot of kayakers that would rather see that 1 through 5 plus or 1 through 6 scale transition to something closer to climbing that has more variables, just because the difficulty between class 4 and class 6 or 5 plus, like 4 to 5 plus, there's a lot of variation in there. And so it really depends. But, you know, obviously when you get in there with higher water or lower water, there's a lot of different variables. Or if it's a first ascent and nobody's been in there before, there's a lot of kind of risk assessment and calculations that go into those adventures.
Well, you talk about the danger in sort of a fun tone. Like, you make it interesting, but it is dangerous. Well, I'm sure that, you know, you're alive, so you've got a lot of great stories about fun adventures. But what's the worst thing that ever happened?
Man, yeah, I think it's a laugh or cry situation, just because you have a lot of different experiences that are challenging out there. For myself, I'd say probably the most impactful situation was doing some solo kayaking on the headwaters of the Sacramento here locally in town, and was doing laps by myself, hiked in alone, and basically had my boat snap my leg in half while I was by myself, which was pretty wild. So I had a pretty horrendous spiral tib fib fracture while hiking in, doing some solo laps, and that led to me basically having to hold my leg together. It broke in 5 places, and then I had to kind of scoot like a snail, more or less, kind of crawling back to my car before I could get back to my phone to call my mom and get out to the hospital. But, you know, that was my home run, and something that I think I'm more comfortable and in term, I think we get complacency in those situations where we're most comfortable. But it led to about an hour of me having to crawl out of the situation that I got myself into. And then a friend hiked back in and got my boat and stuff out of the canyon that I was in. But that led into a 14-hour epic of being in the hospital, having to get cut out of all my layers, a faint heartbeat. They had to kind of set my leg and then administer kind of painkillers after my leg got set. That led into getting a titanium nail and 4 screws put into my right leg to get it all put back together, and in turn led to about 8 years of having that hardware. And fortunately, I was able to get that hardware removed back in April, and has really been a game changer for kind of getting back in the mix and still kind of pushing the limits of whitewater and kind of the objectives and goals and just, you know, places I'd like to see with the time I still got left.
Well, word to the wise, don't kayak alone. And if you do, have good friends. If you're just tuning
in. True. Absolutely. Yeah. Good friends, I would put at the top of the list. They're always going to come and help you with whatever questionable decisions you choose to make.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the JX Outside on the Jefferson Exchange. My guests are Nicole Larson, our resident outdoor enthusiast, Jen Bray, a wildland firefighter, and Sean Bullock, a former professional whitewater kayaker who now makes documentary films. Sean, before we leave this adventure, what do kayakers do in the winter?
We kayak. I know it sounds kind of crazy, but I think that we live in a very special place of how the topography as well as elevation plays here, right? And kind of as our seasons are shifting, we get some of the highest water in the winter time, right? So I think that it's a much smaller group of us that choose to paddle year round. But every big pow day we're having up on the mountain, it's just as big, if not a bigger, water day down in the canyon. So the fact that we live in a place that we can get snow up on the mountain and rain down in the rivers, it just really is a testament to us getting to live in such a unique part of the state and really a mecca when it comes to outdoor enthusiasts.
Well, with all the rain and flooding lately, how are the rivers and waterfalls looking now?
They've been ripping. Yeah, no, I've pretty much been on a 2-week bender of boating. I definitely should have been working, but it was kind of waking up every morning to hearing the rain pounding on the sides of the house, as well as watching those gauges spike. It's definitely been, we've had some flows that we haven't had in the last 10 years. So getting the opportunity to bite off large sections of the Sacramento, similar events have happened, which allowed me to do a full 1-day descent of the Sacramento, which was pretty unreal, of starting at Box Canyon Dam and ending at Shasta Lake at Antlers Dock. Those are kind of the weather events that we have here that are really unique to kind of let you bite off really long sections of whitewater, as well as getting to see them in a bunch of different states of low water all the way up to flooding.
Well, Nicole and Jen, does the winter invite either of you to get into the water?
Cold plunging is actually one of my favorite things to do. Recently, I put myself through a challenge of a daily cold plunge in the month of last January, but it was truly an experience to focus on my breath as I was in the water. There's just a sense of calm that comes over me.
Well, Jen, you're on both extremes. You're a wildland firefighter, and then when that's over, you jump into freezing cold water.
There is something that draws me into the waterfalls and the icicles, and I have to get in.
What about you, Nicole?
Well, I do have a sauna that's on our creek, so I have also been doing the cold plunge, but not on the days that the big storms come through, because I would have to rope myself off. Of course, where we live, I feel like we are abundant with waterfalls. And for the folks who are not cold plunging and not going skiing, there are so many great adventures locally in Siskiyou County and through the Rogue Valley and up to Prospect to see beautiful waterfall flows right now.
Highway 138 is a mecca of waterfalls all the way down it.
Yeah, and in Prospect, we got Mill Creek Falls and Bar Creek Falls and Tokadee Falls. Incredible adventures, but there is a safety to it. You need to be aware and pay attention to where you're standing. It does get slippery out there. Also, there's McLeod Falls down in Mount Shasta, and that one's really well put together for safety, like to take kids and go see these big falls. It's exciting. It's exciting.
Okay. And the headwaters of the Wood River just out of Chiloquin are magical, too, and it's a safe place to get in.
And when the water freezes, you can skate on it.
That does happen sometimes. They tried to do that, well, they, meaning Mother Nature, to freeze Castle Lake, and it just didn't quite get there this year, which was sort of a bummer, but that's okay. There's a lot of adventure still.
There are places where you can ice skate.
Oh, yes, well, ice skate. Yes, of course. We've got the skating rinks in Medford and Klamath Falls and Mount Shasta. Sadly, the Ashland skating rink did not open this year.
Yeah. Ashland has had some interesting weather this year, and Mount Ashland isn't up to the snowpack.
It just isn't, which also, all these athletes have something to do still here in this area. We are mountain biking.
Mountain biking?
Still mountain biking. Actually, on the way here to JPR this morning, I ran into two young gentlemen all decked out in their outdoor warm mountain bike clothes, and they were heading up the trails. And so I got to chat with them a little bit more about how are the conditions right now, and they said they are excellent.
Okay. Yep. So you have people out there mountain biking. Sean's somewhere biting off a piece of a river. And there are people out there birding and counting the birds. There's a lot of outdoor activities in the winter. I know that Reading has an upcoming marathon.
They do. I think it's January 18th, I believe. And that goes along the Sacramento River, which will be stunning as well because the river is high and it's fast. So the trail that goes along the Sacramento River is wide. It's beautiful. It's well-supported. It's a well-known marathon through the northern state because it's a winter one and it's usually great weather.
There are so many different activities that, and recreation activities that I don't think about in the winter, even gardening.
Yes, we do have a couple of gardening things coming up. There is
There's a national seed and plant swap.
Thank you.
That's hosted by the Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center and the Pollinator Project Rogue Valley. And that's here at Southern Oregon University on January 17th.
Yes, exactly. And then we also have mushrooms and winter foraging, which is sometimes better at this time of year, especially since it's been so warm and so wet this year.
There have been record numbers of chanterelles, matsutakis, the cat's tongues. Some people make gummies out of the cat's tongue mushrooms. They mix it with elderberry, so it enhances
for health,
your health.
Health benefits, yes. Mm-hmm. And there's lion's mane, which looks like the shaggy icicles. So you'll see these. Don't always pick them. Sometimes better just to take pictures unless you know for
sure. Or go
with
an expert.
Go with an expert.
So you spend a lot of time in the woods, Jen,
yes.
as a firefighter. You do mushrooms as well?
I hunt for mushrooms, yes, the morels in the springtime, and then in the fall and winter months, the chanterelles and matsutakis and the boletes. They've been epic.
All right. We're going to have to leave it there. That's all the time we have. Thank you all.
We'll see you in the snow.
See you outside.
We'll see you outside. I don't know about the snow. Thank you, Sean. My guests were Nicole Larson, a resident outdoor enthusiast, Jen Bray, a wildland firefighter, and Sean Bullock, a whitewater kayaker and filmmaker. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio.